All right, back with another Panther Lair podcast to talk to you about Pitt sports as we get going in the middle of the week here. So getting used to this Wednesday schedule, and I apologize. I try and release the podcast early on Wednesday, try and have it ready to go for you, but sometimes it goes a little bit later. But anyway, we got this podcast out. It's good to talk to you. Glad to have everybody tuned into the podcast. I appreciate everybody who listens to the radio show, the Panthers Insider Show on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. I know we had one week where we had to move it to Sunday morning at 9 a.m., but we're going to be Saturday mornings at 8 a.m., even on the road games. Just kind of set up some studio time for the Duke game. We'll be live in Durham talking about Pitt sports, getting ready for that Duke game in 2 weeks. Of course, Pitt's got Delaware this weekend as the Panthers move into their final non-conference game with Delaware, and then dive headlong into the ACC schedule after that. 7 ACC games to finish out the season. They start at Duke. They have a week off. They go to Syracuse on a Friday night. And, I mean, you know the schedule. You know how it goes. You know how it sets up. You know that they're 2-2 right now. You know that they're coming off a big win over Central Florida. And obviously, I had the Drive Home podcast on Saturday night after that one. And we've written about it and talked about it a lot on PantherLair.com since then. And message boards have been very busy. If you don't know about PantherLair.com, if you're a Pitt fan and you don't know about the website, Panther-Lair.com, Pittsburgh.Rivals.com, I think you might be missing out a little bit. I don't think you're really tuned into what's going on with Pitt, whether it's on the news side, the analysis side, or just the community side, because it is the best online community of Pitt fans that you're going to find there on our message boards at PantherLair.com. And certainly it's been very active on the message board since Saturday, through the game on Saturday, but definitely since then, Saturday night, all the way through Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. I mean, fans are juiced right now about that win over UCF because, I mean, I don't have to say because. You know why. For a lot of reasons. I mean, that was a game that Pitt was not expected to win. Double-digit underdogs. I didn't think they were going to win. You didn't think they were going to win. The vast majority of people outside the football program did not believe they were going to win. Most people thought they were going to lose and that it was going to look something like last year's 45-14 blowout. And if it wasn't going to be that bad, it was still going to be a pretty handy victory. I think there was the expectation the UCF was going to cover. The UCF was going to go down the field on Pitt rather smoothly, and that Pitt was going to continue to have the offensive struggles that dogged the Panthers through their first three games. And they did have some of those offensive struggles, but they were also much better than they had been in the first three games. They end up with 35 points, 28 of those come on offense. They get a touchdown out of special teams on a punt block. Basically, all the things you need to do to beat a team that's as good as UCF, Pitt did it. They got turnovers. They did turn the ball over once, but they won the turnover battle, and they made a big play on special teams. And then, when it absolutely came down to it, when it was crunch time, when they absolutely had to make plays to win the game, they went out and made plays to win the game and drove the field with some help. There were penalties. I think there was at least one penalty on that final drive. I forget what the number ended up being. But they made the plays they needed to make. And, of course, the Pitt special play. Just an unbelievable play call in that situation. Unbelievable execution by the players in that situation. And lead to it all leads to an unbelievable win for Pitt. And the perspective of Pitt now changes completely. I don't know if a loss would have changed our perspective on Pitt and Pitt's prospects for the rest of the season. I think a loss, you and I went into Saturday's game expecting a loss, and we had our expectations built for the final eight games, based on a loss against UCF. I think if they had ended up losing, I don't think it would have changed our expectations that much. If they don't score on that Pitt special player, if they don't score on that final drive and they end up losing, 34-28, well, they kept it closer than we expected. They would have made a lot of plays, more plays than we expected, and certainly gave UCF much tougher of a game than we would have expected. But I don't think it would have changed much in the way of our expectations for these final eight games. Conversely, because they won, and because they won not just with, they didn't win with smoke and mirrors in this game. They were able to get turnovers, which is not always a reliable element in a game, as evidenced by the fact that Pitt hasn't had one since the Miami game. Prior to this UCF game, they hadn't had one since the Miami game last year. And you know, I don't think running that Pitt special play is a smoke and mirror type of situation, because they made plays on offense kind of throughout the game. They weren't 60 minutes of great offense. They had lulls in there. Certainly UCF rattles off 31 points, consecutive points, to go ahead 31-21. The offense went into a hole after going up 21-0. And that's an issue, and that's concerning. But the offense was good enough on the whole beyond just that Pitt special play. They were good enough that I think you come out of that game encouraged by the offensive performance. It was certainly an improvement from the Penn State game, which I think was an improvement from the Ohio game, which was an improvement from the Virginia game. And you get steady, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 games in a row where you're showing signs of improvement. Even if Kenny Pickett didn't set a new career high in passing yards and he wasn't quite as efficient against UCF as he was against Penn State, the offense overall was better than it had been the previous weeks. And that's what you've wanted to see out of this offense week after week. I think he came out of the Virginia game saying, well, they stunk and they need to get a lot better. And they did get better for the Ohio game. And came out and said, okay, well, let's see how they do against a really good defense at Penn State. And they did even better than they did against Ohio. You came out of that and said, okay, well, now let's see if they can build on it, see if they can keep improving. And I think they did with the overall performance against UCF. Week by week by week, they've been getting better. And on the other side of the ball, I mean, they haven't really been bad at all. There have been plays that they've given up. And I'm past the point of thinking, well, defense isn't that good because they gave up some plays. I mean, unless you are the very top, the cream of the crop, and you're recruiting the kind of defensive lineman, in particular, the kind of defensive lineman you can get at Clemson and, you know, LSU and these kinds of places, you know, in Alabama, you know, you're going to give up plays every now and then. Even those schools give up plays every now and then. You know, we saw Pitt make plays against that Clemson defense a few years ago. We saw Pitt, you know, drive the field at least once against Clemson last year in the ACC championship game. You're going to give up plays every now and then. The key is to be able to minimize those plays and not, you know, first of all, make them happen as little as possible. Second of all, don't let the opponent string together a couple of them on the same drive. And third, if you give up that 50-yard pass, try and hold the opponent to a field goal. You know, bend but don't break. Give up a little bit, but rebound and ultimately shut them down. And that was the thing on Saturday. They made life really difficult for UCF and UCF quarterback Dylan Gabriel. He finished, get the exact number. I had the game book here, but it was open to the defensive stats because I was looking at that. 338 yards on 25 of 42 passing, 2 touchdowns and 2 interceptions, and sacked 6 times. That was the hardest game of that freshman quarterback's life. You know, or at least in college, because it's only his third or fourth game. They made life very difficult. They didn't make it easy for him to see what they were doing. They didn't make it easy for him to see where the pressure was coming from. They didn't make it easy for him to see where the coverage was. They came out and played their base defense almost the whole game. That was a big change in this defensive approach as it relates to defending UCF. Whereas last year, they felt like they needed to use the nickel package. You know, I think I talked about this on the Drive Home podcast with 4 down linemen, 2 linebackers, 5 defensive backs. They felt like they needed to use that package against UCF's offense because of the way they threw the ball. And the same thing with Syracuse as well. And they did that last year with Syracuse. And, you know, when they were down in Orlando, UCF ended up running for like 200 yards against them because they were in that nickel package most of the time. This year, the coaches trusted the defensive backs, believed they could defend them, defend UCF's offense with the base package, and they did it, and they were successful. And then they went to their standard delta defense, delta personnel grouping on third down, which is kind of what they did. I mean, that's what they did against Penn State and Ohio and Virginia. They're talented enough now. They have a good enough sense of their defensive scheme. They have a, you know, really good coordinator calling the plays. They're good enough overall to play that way. And I think hang with just about every offense on their schedule because they just face the best offense on their schedule. You know, I mean, by any measure, you look at their regular season schedule, UCF was the best offense on the schedule. They just faced them and they held them to 34 points and 423 yards, right? And one of those, you know, touchdowns came on a punt return. So it was really 27 points. And, you know, and the other touchdown came, and I mean, you don't, you know, nitpick this too much, because it was still a touchdown drive that UCF gets credit for. But, you know, UCF also had a touchdown on a drive of three plays for 27 yards after the A.J. Davis fumble. So, you know, really they gave up two long touchdown drives. And they were long, five plays for 68 yards, five plays for 87 yards. But UCF's other two touchdowns, one came on a 27-yard drive after a fumble, and the other was a punt return for a touchdown. And then they got two field goals. So the best offense Pitt is going to face this season, at least in the regular season, really kind of couldn't find answers, consistent answers against Pitt. And some of it was the scheme. Some of it was the way they were defending UCF with their pressures and their coverages. Obviously, getting to Dillon Gabriel as much as they did was huge, with six sacks and seven quarterback hurries and five pass breakups. That doesn't hurt either. You know, that it was big to get to Dillon Gabriel. The coverage was important. The pressure packages were important, you know, all in terms of like schemes and whatnot. But also, they were good in one-on-one battles. You know, I think Dane Jackson gave up five receptions on seven targets, but really only had one play where they got a first down out of it, and that was because he missed a tackle. Otherwise, he was super solid and locked those guys down and kept them from really moving with the ball after the catch. Dane Jackson's playing at a really high level now. Jason Pinnock playing at a really high level now. He gets the interception in the end zone. He breaks up a pass in the end zone. He gets hurt. But, I mean, an incredible play in the end zone when that he makes there. Damari Mathis is playing well now, and he got hurt as well. It seems like Pinnock and Mathis both should be fine. We'll see what Pat Narduzzi and the defensive coaches decide to do with those guys against Delaware as far as how much time they're going to play and, you know, what their level of involvement is going to be. But then, you know, obviously the safeties, Damar Hamlin and Paris Ford, are playing really well. You go front to back on this defense right now, and I mean, you find a lot of things to be encouraged about for now and for later. I mean, for now, all these guys are playing really well. You know, I mean, you seriously, front to back. And we're going to talk to Pat Bostic in a little bit, former Pitt quarterback and the current color commentator on the radio broadcasts. And I asked him point blank, I mean, this, you know, fill in the blank, this is the best Pitt defense since. And he fills in the blank, and he pretty much agrees. I mean, you can look at all three levels of the defense, and you see a lot of talent, probably more talent than Pat Narduzzi has had at any point since he's been at Pitt. And then you can look at the backups and see more depth than at any point that Pat Narduzzi has had since he's been at Pitt. Narduzzi said on Monday that they used 27 players on defense. I counted 25. So we differ in our count there. I think they only use 25 guys on defense, but either way, 25 or 27 is a huge number. 27 is obviously bigger, but 25 alone is a huge number. When you look at what they use with, I think, four defensive ends, five defensive tackles, six linebackers, six cornerbacks, and four safeties, depending on how you put Eric Hallett, you could either say six cornerbacks and four safeties or five cornerbacks and five safeties. Either way, it works out to about 25 guys. And the thing is, so you have 25 players, right? 11 of them are starters. And that leaves 14 reserves who played. Well, of those 14, and this is where it gets really exciting for the next few years. Of those 14 reserves who played against UCF, eight of them are second-year players. Guys from that 2018 recruiting class. Wendell Davis, Devin Danielson, David Green, Tyler Bentley, Marquez Williams, John Morgan, Habakkuk Baldonado, Eric Hallett. And, you know, some of those guys only played less than 10 snaps. Some of those guys played a lot of snaps. You know what I mean? Morgan was out there a fair amount. Baldonado was out there a decent amount. Danielson played a good amount of snaps. But even the guys who didn't play a lot of snaps, Wendell Davis, David Green, Tyler Bentley, they played important snaps. And they made an impact when they played. Against an offense like UCF, there aren't really any unimportant stats or snaps. You know, and so like David Green and Tyler Bentley, these guys play a handful of snaps in the base defense. The coaches trust them enough to leave them out there on third down when they go to the Delta package. And when those guys were out there, so I mean, you know, the Delta has three defensive linemen and two ends and a tackle. And there was kind of a first Delta unit and a second Delta unit. And the second Delta unit was Morgan and Baldonado at defensive end, and then either David Green or Tyler Bentley. And I think each tackle got two reps each in the Delta. So they ran four snaps by my count, by my note taking, which admittedly I'm getting older, and so trying to keep up with when the offense is UCF, it's a little bit tricky. But by my count, they ran four snaps with that second team Delta unit out there with Morgan and Baldonado at end, and then either Green or Bentley. Two snaps for each of those guys. On those four snaps, all on third down, UCF didn't get a first down. So even though David Green and Tyler Bentley maybe only played eight snaps or nine snaps in the game, there, you know, good things happened for the defense when they were on the field. That's really encouraging for next year. And when you look at it, you know, guys who aren't going to be back, I mean, who are they losing from this defense after this season? You're losing Saleem Brightwell, Dane Jackson, Jazzy Stalker, Amir Watts, Damar Hamlin, Kylan Johnson. I'm looking at my paper here, and I mean, those are the guys who are out of eligibility after this season. Six guys. They used 25 on Saturday. You're going to get back Patrick Jones and Phil Campbell and Chase Pine and Deslin Alexander and Jalen Twyman and Damari Mathis and Paris Ford and Jason Pinnock and Cam Bright. You're going to get back all those guys in the 2018 class that I mentioned. Oh, and you're going to get back, what's that guy's name? Oh, Rashad Weaver and Keyshawn Camp. I mean, this defense is not only loaded to play really well in 2019, they're set up to continue that success in 2020. And when you look at how they're playing and what they're doing now and the individual battles they're winning and the ways they're playing well and the ways they're having success on defense, I mean, you don't look at it and say, this is not sustainable. Jalen Twyman is killing guys up front. You know, Patrick Jones and Deslin Alexander are killing guys off the edge. You know, the linebackers, and Kylan Johnson's been really the biggest revelation. He's been, you know, one of the standouts, maybe one of the best linebackers that Pat Narduzzi has had since he got to Pitt. But, I mean, Cam Bright is, you know, light years ahead of where he was a year ago. Phil Campbell, in making the transition from safety to linebacker, is playing really well. He's going to be back for another year. Chase Pine is a reliable guy. Oh, Elias Reynolds will be back. He didn't even play on Saturday because he was hurt. You know, at cornerback, assuming you get everybody back, you've got Jason Pinnock and Damari Mathis ready to go. I mean, that's a pretty good duo to start out with. You lose Damar Hamlin, but you've got Paris Ford back, and you've got, you know, Brandon Hill, a young guy, or Eric Hallett, who's been playing a lot lately. He's been in the Delta package, the first team Delta package, as a slot, you know, slot cover guy, if you want to call him a corner or a safety. When he's played in the base defense, he's mostly been at safety, so I guess you would consider him a safety. You know, but he's been playing more in the last two games. First two games, they tended to go with the three corners, Jackson, Pinnock, and Mathis, at in the Delta package. But then these last two games, Hallett has been seeing a lot of snaps out there. So, I mean, maybe you go with Paris Ford and Eric Hallett next year. Your starting lineup next year doesn't look like it's much of a fall off from this year. I mean, one of those guys, Jones and Alexandra, one of them is not going to be starting next year. I mean, think about that. And they're both playing at a really high level right now. One of them is going to come off the bench. That's pretty impressive. And then, you know, you're going to have one of those guys plus Rashad Weaver on the outside, and then Jalen Twyman and Keyshawn Camp on the inside. I mean, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but damn, this is a pretty good defensive line with depth behind it. Baldonado is going to come off the bench again next year. Or maybe not. He might even win the job because he looks really good out there. You know, John Morgan is going to come off the bench next year, and he looks really good. And you've got the depth of the tackle, like I talked about, with Danielson and Green and Bentley. This defense, it's taken 5 years. It's taken five recruiting classes. 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Yeah, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Five recruiting classes, but it's getting built. It has been built. It is built into what Pat Narduzzi wanted it to be when he got here, what he was expected to build it into when he arrived at Pitt. Ostensibly the reason he was hired to be the head coach at Pitt, you know, based on his success at Michigan State with the defense. It's pretty impressive, and it's encouraging for the long haul. It's encouraging for the future both now and later. And when you talk about the now too, and there's been apprehension this week, you know, Pitt fans getting nervous about being too optimistic. Yeah, I mean, this is just the damaged psyche of Pitt fans, the damaged psyche of the Pitt fan base that, you know, always waiting for the other shoe to drop. If things are going well, they almost don't want things to be going well, because if they do, that means there's inevitably going to be a fall. And, you know, I mean, the reality is eventually you're going to lose another football game. And I think for fans, that counts enough. I've seen people talking about how, oh, they didn't capitalize on the Clemson game in 2016. You know, this, I keep reading about this. Pitt fans, Pitt does things to get the fan base so fired up, and then they blow it. Well, the Clemson game in 2016, I'm sure it had the fan base really fired up. And I know that because when they came back and played Duke the next week at Heinz Field, there were like 30,000 people there for that fired up fan base. Although they won that game and they won the next game, they lost to Northwestern in the Pinstripe Bowl, largely because Nate Peterman, James Conner, and Dorian Johnson got hurt. So I'm not sure about they really just fell off the map after the Clemson game. You know, Miami game in 2017 was the season finale. It was the end of a 5-7 season, but it's hardly like they, you know, you can't use that 5-7 season as an example of Pitt getting fans fired up and then falling flat. You know, I don't know. Does it happen sometimes? Have there been instances where Pitt has won a big game and then you know, blown it or laid an egg the next time out? Sure. You know, they won the 13-9 game, and 8 months later, they hosted Bowling Green to open the 2008 season. You know what happened there. 2013, they got a big win over Notre Dame at Heinz Field. Come from behind win, right? Won it with a second-half comeback. Might have even been a fourth-quarter comeback. Huge. Got a lot of people fired up. The next week, they lost to North Carolina in that game with Ryan Switzer and two punt return touchdowns. It's happened. It has happened when they've won a big game and then come back and blown it and blown the momentum. But you know, I don't think it happens as often as Pitt fans think it does or will claim it does. You know, and I mean, like last year, I still remember, and I always cite this, that when, you know, after they beat Duke, all right, it was like, well, okay, Pitt's got a chance where they could actually control their own destiny here. But we've seen Pitt be in this situation before, and they always blow it. Well, and then they went down to beat Virginia on the road on a Friday night in a game that I think a lot of people didn't think they were going to win. Okay, that's great. They've got people amped up, but this is where they always blow it. You know, this Virginia Tech game, this is the kind of game that Pitt always loses. They're never able to capitalize on the opportunity when it presents itself. Well, they only beat Virginia Tech by 30 and ran for 500 yards of offense or 500 yards on the ground or something like that. So then they go forward the next week, and it's Wake Forest. They go down to Wake Forest. They got a chance to clinch the Coastal Division. We'll see if Pitt can actually take advantage of the opportunity that presents itself. They never. This is the kind of game Pitt always loses. They won it again, you know? And yeah, they lost to Miami. They lost to Clemson. They lost to Stanford. Eventually, they were going to lose another game. They didn't need to lose three in a row. Eventually, they were going to lose another game. But, you know, I think if you spend all your time waiting for the other shoe to drop, eventually it will. And then you'll say that you were proven right while ignoring all the times that you got it wrong. All that said, there's no reason Pitt can't go out here and win a whole bunch of these final eight games. No reason at all. There isn't one team on the schedule that's unbeatable or even looks like it's markedly better than Pitt. You go with ESPN's FPI rankings, the Football Power Index. You know, Pitt is like 42 right now. I wrote all this down. We're entering the part of the season where I have a lot of papers with a lot of random notes scribbled on them. Let's see if I can. I try to organize the important ones before I start doing like a podcast or a radio show so I can reference things right off the bat, but can't seem to. Oh, there it is. I wrote it on the upside down part. Pitt is number 42 in ESPN's FPI right now, Football Power Index, I think it is. For whatever it's worth. The only team that Pitt is going to face the rest of the way that's currently ranked higher is Miami. They're number 28 because they have that really impressive 2-2 record with wins over Bethune-Cookman and Central Michigan. Oh, and they lost to North Carolina, who lost to Appalachian State. Look, North Carolina is always going to be a struggle. I mean, North Carolina is always going to be North Carolina until you actually beat North Carolina. Miami is a challenge for Pitt because they have talented players. And Syracuse, when you go up to the Carrier Dome, particularly on Friday night, although I think the wind is fully coming out of those sails, I mean, that's going to be a tough game, though. I mean, I can't remember the last not close game against Syracuse. I guess 2014 in the season finale, they beat them like 30-14 or something like that. The 2016 game was that 76-61 game. I mean, it was still close. You know what I mean? Closer than you would like it to be. It certainly wasn't what I would consider a blowout, despite the high scores. It's going to be a challenge. And in the last, you know, not close game at the Carrier Dome. I don't know, maybe 2010 or something like that. I think 2010 was a bit of a blowout. Wait, I have the media guide. See, I have all these things handy and ready for it. Yeah, 45-14. They beat Syracuse in 2010, 45-14. So, I mean, it's not – and since then, it's been close. And they've lost twice up there since then. So, it's not a guarantee that you're going to beat Syracuse. That's another one that I would circle as probably being one of the tough games on the schedule. But they should beat Duke. They should beat Georgia Tech. They should beat Carolina. They should beat Virginia Tech, and they should beat Boston College. I think the two toughest games, like you get Delaware this week, Duke next week, and then you have a week off, and then you get two in a row. You get Syracuse on a Friday night at the Carrier Dome, and you get Miami at Heinz Field. I think those are the two toughest games remaining on the schedule. And that's not to overlook anyone. That's certainly not to say that Pitt should overlook anyone. That's not to say that Pitt can beat anyone just by showing up. Don't mistake what I'm saying here. And this is the thing. We always get in these conversations on the message boards about, well, Pitt, you know, we can't be overlooking anyone. We need to stay focused week by week. You have to take it one game at a time. All right, coach. You know, you're a fan, right? We're two guys posting on message boards here. There isn't a damn thing we're going to say. There isn't a single mindset we're going to have that's going to change the outcome of the game, you know, positive or negative. Okay? It's just not going to happen. If I want to look ahead to how Pitt can win the next eight games and go 10-2, I absolutely can do it. If you want to look ahead and find ways for them to go 8-4, 9-3, or 10-2, or whatever it is, we can do that. This is not going to change anything, and it's kind of fun to look ahead because you look at this team, and again, I think there are the things they are doing are not trying to think of the right word, but I mean, I think you can have confidence and optimism about the way they're playing right now. You know, they didn't have their best game on offense against UCF, and they still scored four touchdowns. They gave up some plays on defense against UCF, and they still really only gave up two long drives, you know, three offensive touchdowns and a couple of field goals. You know, I mean, there's certainly a question mark about Alex Kessman. He's not doing well right now. He's 3 of 8 on his kicks, and he's missed the last three that he's attempted. Pat Narduzzi was sort of, I use the word cagey. He's kind of cagey about that. On Monday, saying they figured out some solution, they know what they need to do to fix it, or something like that. But, you know, that's an issue. They've got to get resolved. They've got to figure out the kicking game. But, you know, offense is heading in the right direction, I think, and defense is already there. So I think there's every reason in the world to be optimistic about this team right now and their position in the ACC. And the situation they're in right now with the rest of the 2019 schedule. I think Pitt fans very much can feel optimistic about it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I kind of think you should. You know what I mean? I don't think there's a lot to cause concern. You know, as long as the offense keeps moving forward and things keep improving and they keep doing what they're doing. All right, let's talk to our friend Pat Bostic, former Pitt quarterback, current color commentator. He knows the team. He knows football. You know him. He's as good as it gets. Great insight as always. And so let's talk to Pat. I wanted to get him on just to talk about this season so far, what he's seen out of Kenny Pickett, and of course that play at the end of the UCF game, the Pitt special. I wanted to get his thoughts on that one. Thoughts from former Pitt quarterback Pat Bostic. All right, Pat. I know you're up in the radio booth. You're watching this game on Saturday against Central Florida, and it comes down to it. 4th and 2 from the 3. They're lining up. I think I know how your mind works. I'm sure you're thinking about what kind of play they're going to run. First of all, did you think they were going to run the Pitt special? And second of all, you know, what did you think they were going to do in that situation? What was your expectation?
Yeah, you know, I saw them. I mean, obviously, I thought they'd be shotgun. I figured it would be, you know, some sort of crossing route, some sort of rub route, where there would be a couple options for Kenny. You know, even if he was in the pocket or if he was on the move, there would be something where he could run, throw, or obviously, you know, find the secondary options. But when I saw him go to audible and you know, or seemingly go to audible and then get to the hip of the tackle, I'm like, uh-oh, here we go. And obviously saw the direct snap. First, I'm thinking to myself, okay, there's no way they're running it. So I figured, okay, there's some trickery coming here. And honestly saw the look. And I think Kenny mentioned it after the game, saw the end and outside linebacker kind of come up the field. I'm like, this doesn't look good. And he did a heck of a job slipping into the end zone, because I don't think that play was, you know, it's not designed to be that difficult. But it was, I honestly didn't expect that. And, you know, it was certainly a heck of a call.
Yeah, definitely in a big situation. I want to have a lot of things I want to ask you about the offense, but just as we're talking about direct snaps to the running backs, you know, they've used the Wildcat formation a handful of times this year. They had I think they ran it three times in the UCF game, and, you know, worked well in the first two plays, and then the third play it lost a couple yards. Do you think that's something they should keep mixing in or try to continue to develop, or just maybe roll out a couple plays a game? What do you think about the Wildcat?
I like it. I mean, well, you know, first of all, against UCF, I mean, it was the exact same formation that Stanford used when they ran it the week prior and had some success on it. You know, they've played a lot of teams that played man-to-man. You know, when you get man-to-man and you're a primarily a 3-4 wide receiver team like Pitt is, you get a lot of unfavorable front looks. I mean, you get a lot of six-man fronts, seven-man fronts, where you're losing a blocker, you're losing a guy. You know, you got a free hat. So the Wildcat, by getting the quarterback out of there and having your de facto quarterback be a legitimate downhill running threat, you even the numbers up, and I think, you know, increase your chances of having efficient, successful runs, and they've done it nicely. So I think it's a complementary part of their offense. It's something that, you know, makes sense on paper. It evens the box up for them. And but by no means, you know, I think the third time was probably too much in a row. But otherwise, it's been an effective supplement to what they do.
They also had the two snaps when they had two quarterbacks on the field, right? Nick Patty ran it on the first one, and then I think he handed it off on the second one. With Kenny Pickett split out wide in the first and then Jeff George out wide on the second. Do you think that's just put a couple things on film for future opponents to have to plan for, or do you think there's something that could be built out of that?
I think there's something that could be built out of it. You know, it's kind of like you plant a seed, you know, with the opposing coordinator and then subsequent opposing coordinators, like, what could they do out of this? But more than anything, Chris, I think it's you know, it was a play that Nick was really comfortable with. He does a good job on that zone read. Mm-hmm. It's a way to get your backup quarterback some meaningful reps in a game, running a play he's comfortable with. And, you know, I'm confident they probably had some other looks off of it, but I wouldn't be shocked to see that grow, especially with what happened to Kenny in that game. You know, he's going to, you know, continue to throw the ball 50 times a game or 45 times a game. He's got to take some hits, and it's important to have, you know, a guy like Nick Patty some meaningful reps. I mean, playing in mop-up duty is one thing, but going in there in the thick of a tight game and, you know, going into a game that you're down 10 points at the time and making a couple plays, that's really good, you know, for him to build his confidence.
Right. You know, I thought on his touchdown run when it happened, as the play was happening, or not touchdown run, touchdown pass to Dontavius Butler Jenkins, I thought as it was happening live, he was just holding on to the ball too long. Butler Jenkins was wide open, throw it to him. But then watching the replay, he waits for, I don't know if it's a corner or safety to kind of bail. Because if he throws it sooner, you know what I mean, Butler Jenkins gets tackled at like the two or something like that. So it actually looked like a heady play. I mean, is that what you saw out of Nick Patty?
Yeah, I did. First of all, we had a free rusher coming right at him too, and which, you know, it looked like a bust in protection. But you know, that's something that candidly you don't get to see in practice a lot with Nick, because they, you know, they wear those red jerseys.
Yeah.
But he's a playmaker, and he's just kind of a gamer. It doesn't look real orthodox, but he can move as good as Kenny. He's not as strong as Kenny. But he can move as good as him, and yeah, he's just a crafty football player. And I thought he showed great poise there. Because you know, it's easy being the backup. I know this from experience coming in, and you know, you're trying not to take a sack, not to turn the ball over, all the things that, you know, backups can come in and do, and game can get out of hand quickly. But he goes in there and is heady enough and poised enough to be patient, wait for the picture to clear up a little bit, not panic, and make a play. That'll be huge for him to draw from. Even though it's, you know, he threw two passes, those are in big moments, and I thought he acquitted himself quite nicely.
No doubt. What about Kenny Pickett? What'd you think of how he played against UCF? Not as good numbers wise as he did against you know, in the Penn State game. And you know, he was good in the first quarter by the numbers and just by the looks test, but then the final three, you know, what wasn't as good? What did you make of his performance on Saturday?
I mean, I think he was probably under a little bit more pressure than he was against Penn State, particularly later in the game. You know, there's some big plays out there that, you know, his numbers would balloon quite quickly if they hit him. I mean, the ball down the field to French that gets broken up, and a 14 kid made a great play. But if, you know, if Maurice is able to go up and get that, that's a 45-yard gain. I think after his shoulder got dinged, you know, his first couple throws were off. And he had Butler Jenkins down the seam, and he kind of threw it low and behind him. I think he's probably, it might be a walk-in touchdown. I mean, it might be a foot race touchdown. That's what, you know, 60 to 80 yards. Billy Carter dropped an angle route across the middle. That was at least a 15, 20-yard gain. So there's some plays out there that would make his stats look better. I thought he missed some throws after he got, you know, popped his shoulder on the ground and kind of, you know, had to go to the locker room, came back, looked a little stiff. But, you know, the bottom line is he came on that last drive and he made some big-time plays. You know, the ball to Taysir Mack across the middle is a big time throw. It was a little angle post route from a cut split, and it wasn't like he was wide open. I mean, this ball was on his upfield shoulder high enough that he could elevate for it. It's just a perfect throw. He waited out Maurice French on a crossing on a dig route on that series. So what I see from this guy is, you know, they're running a lot of different concepts in the passing game, but they're all things that he is growing more and more comfortable seeing against multiple defenses. And he's playing with a lot of confidence and poise. The feet coming undone like we grew to be accustomed with last year, I'm not seeing that anymore. That's a really good sign.
Mm-hmm. What about the running game? Were you encouraged by what you saw on Saturday?
I was. I really was. You know, first of all, the one thing you have to look at is UCF came into the game leading the country in tackles for loss. I think they had five in the game, maybe four, and Pitt had 12.
Yeah.
You know, so the penetration that they're used to getting, which again, you know, Pitt had some trouble against Virginia with some run blitzes, certainly against Penn State. Even Ohio got them with some run pressures. That was good to see against a very aggressive front. And you know, they got more runs called. I mean, they had 94 plays on offense, not counting a couple that were penalties. So they got some at-bats in the run game, started getting the zone going. And, you know, I really would have loved to see the drive where Davis fumbled continue, because they were just gashing them on outside zone, which is what Dave Warbley wants to run. You know, the left side of their line, I think, is outperforming the right now. Just from my chair, I mean, that Wildcat series is evidence enough. You know, they go two left, they get, you know, 6 and 4 yards or whatever it is, and then one right, and they got a problem. So certainly I think they have, you know, a little bit more experience at left guard position than they do at right guard. And Carter Warren's really coming along. I'm excited to see how they continue to evolve in that department, because, you know, candidly, I didn't, if you would have told me they would rush for, what, 192 against UCF, and I would have said, they must have had a really big run. No, they were efficient, and that's a really good sign, because they have not been that the first three games.
Mm-hmm. Flipping over to the other side, you know, obviously there's, never mind the yardage given up, 400 and some yards. I mean, I think everyone would agree they played really well in defense against against UCF, but really every game this season. So, you know, fill in the blank from your view, this is the best Pitt defense since blank.
Oh, gosh. Probably 09.
Really?
I think. I mean, just based on the, I mean, obviously the numbers, you could certainly, you know, deduce that there's some really good ones that outperform them numbers-wise. But it's funny, you know, I'll share this anecdote. I'm in the facility the other day, and I walk in, and Tony Wise is there. Mm-hmm. Tony was the offensive line coach, you know, for Dave Wonstad, and still comes around the program, still lives in Pittsburgh, and he was watching a film of our defense, and he said, boy, that, you know, they just fly around. And Tony's not one to give compliments a lot. You know, he's seen a lot of football.
Yeah.
I think this is the fastest defense Pitt has had in a long time. It's the best secondary Pitt's had probably since Revis and Lay were out there. When you look at corner. Mm-hmm. And at safety, they're fast. I mean, probably the biggest play of the game is Damari Hamlin's trip-up tackle.
Yeah.
Prior to the pick. I mean, that kid runs a 4.2. you know, not tomorrow. I don't, he looked like he ran a 4.3 on that play, but, and they're doing it without two really good D linemen. Look, I just think, you know, they obviously, Charlie Partridge has done an awesome job with that front, building some depth. You know, not necessarily with thoroughbred guys that are 4-star players. I mean, you know, Haba Baldonado and Deslin Alexander aren't necessarily, you know, rivals, top, you know, 100 players. I mean, they're guys that are growing into really good football players. Patrick Jones, yet another one. Mm-hmm. And their blitzes are hitting, and they've got more speed at linebacker. I think you can't put a – I don't think you can undervalue that. Cam Bright is a 4-4 guy. Kylan Johnson's fast. So when they blitz – from the same depth as guys in years past, they get there faster. And you're seeing quarterbacks get hit. And then you've also got a secondary in the back end that gives them that extra split second to get there, because they can actually press without getting beat off the ball. This defense has come together. It's the Narduzzi defense I think everyone was excited about when he came here. And you know, it took to year five until it finally all came together. They've had elements of it. I think this group has legitimate, you know, they got legitimate guys at all three levels of the defense.
I feel like the linebackers are one, and you, I mean, you touched on it, you know, obviously we see what's happening up front, you know, I mean, you see Jalen Twyman killing guys up there, and, you know, Baldonado coming on, and Alexander and Jones, I mean, and the young guys too, I mean, they played 9 defensive linemen, we see that, we see the secondary, like you said, which, you know, maybe the best since Revis and Lay, but those guys didn't have safeties that are playing like Paris Ford and Damar Hamlin right now. But that middle part, you know, where I think there were the most question marks entering the season, really has been kind of a revelation, I think, with Kylan Johnson and, you know, you mentioned Bright and Campbell. I mean, how important is that middle level just to the whole success of this unit's having?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, probably the unsung hero, to use a, mm-hmm. you know, kind of a catchphrase, but you know, they played 3 middle linebackers, so that's been a little bit of a rotation in there. But all 3 of them, mainly 2 of them, are really experienced guys, with Elias Reynolds and Salim Brightwell. And you know, certainly Chase Pine has some experience in there and has done a good job. But, again, at the outside linebacker position, and even Wendell Davis has given them some good snaps. But at the outside linebacker position, that's where I think they found a strength of their defense. They found some guy. I mean, Cam Bright was almost exclusively a third down guy the past 2 years. Now he's an every down player. Phil Campbell is, you know, moved from safety to linebacker and has been a plug and play guy there. And Kylan Johnson's a was a great offseason, you know, grad transfer acquisition. And I think, you know, the perimeter linebackers, you know, more than anything have been they've been awesome. Even these screen passes teams were throwing, the tailbacks, and I mean, I think it was the first play of the game against UCF. I mean, the closing speed is noticeable. And I think that's a really good sign. And they've got those type of athletes stacked behind them as well for years to come. So I think they've just found their stride. And that's really good that it's only week four and they've found it, because they've played really good football, notwithstanding a couple plays each game.
Mm-hmm. All right, last one for you, Pat, and we'll let you go. You look at these next eight games. Which one, or more than one, which ones worry you the most as you look at these final eight games? I mean, they all look like winnable games. Which is the ones that you're kind of circling? Is that that's going to be the real big challenge for Pitt?
Well, you know, I would be... you know, obviously, they've got to beat North Carolina at some point. So, but all, in all seriousness, I mean, you know, going to the road to the Carrier Dome is never easy. They're never blowouts. They're never walk-away wins. I mean, I think we had one up there maybe in 2010. That was a... I only remember that because I played at the end of the game, which was indicative of us having a sizable lead that year, but... You know, going up to the Dome and playing against Syracuse will be a challenge. You know, Miami always has talent. And if you don't play well against them, they'll take advantage of it. Last year was a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the rest of the year as I rack my brain. I think there are a lot of favorable matchups, candidly, Chris, mm-hmm. Where Pitt should be probably favored to win the game. Not by a lot, but... by enough to, you know, if this team plays well, like they're capable of playing, I think they're a tough out, just with how things have materialized. Probably wouldn't have said that after week one, or even week two. But these last 2 weeks, they've made exponential improvements. And, you know, I think Miami's probably the one team that will legitimately have more talent than them across the board. But... if they play sound football against them at home, I like their shot. So, I think they're in position to go on this proverbial tear that everyone talks about. It's just going to be incumbent on them to get it done.
Yep, that's Pat Bostic. Great stuff from Pat, as always. I mean, you know, it just really good insight, information from him. That two quarterback formation was pretty interesting. Curious to see what happens with that. And a lot of things. I mean, you know, I'm not going to recount every word that Pat just said in a 19-minute interview or whatever it ended up being. But, you know, thanks to him for being so gracious with his time and giving us lots of good, interesting, good insight and information to get ready for this next game. All right, I want to talk basketball. Oh, that's 12:30 kickoff at Heinz Field. Against Delaware. I want to talk basketball. Sorry, I got distracted there for a second. Jeff Cable got a commitment this week. Noah Collier, he's a forward prospect, 6'7 guy, can play either forward spot and really can also kind of drift out to the wing, kind of make plays from the wing. So really a good start to the 2020 class. And it's really all kind of coming into focus. You feel like you're really in the midst of a pretty, or what might be, you know, pretty hectic span here for Jeff Capel. He had recruiting visitors on campus last weekend. He's got guys coming in this weekend, and you know, an opportunity to really make a huge dent in this 2020 class. Noah Collier was the first commitment in the class of 2020, and you look at the current roster. I think everyone's kind of assuming four spots in this class. I mean, they're going to have three to start with. They've got two seniors on the roster and an open scholarship spot. So you got three to start with. And then there's an assumption, maybe the worst kept secret in Pittsburgh sports, and it's not really much of a secret. It's become pretty clear with the efforts of the Pitt coaching staff and what Jeff Capel is trying to do in this 2020 recruiting class. It's pretty clear that they don't expect Xavier Johnson to come back for his junior year. You know, that this will be his final season. That'll open up another scholarship spot. So you're looking at four for the class, you know, a minimum of three, most likely four. I mean, I think there's probably a possibility of having five. I mean, you know, you wonder how long Samson George stays on the roster if he has another season this year that he, you know, where he really just doesn't play. You know, if he ends up either graduating and grad transferring, you know, I mean, at the same time, we've been expecting Samson George to leave the roster for about 2 years now. So maybe he does stick it out and plays through his eligibility at Pitt. I think the working number is four, what everyone's kind of expecting for this class. Noah Collier will be number one. And Jeff Capel, like I said, two official visitors last weekend, two this coming weekend. I think he had some earlier. I think it was that weekend of the Virginia game, the Virginia football game. He had visits that weekend. And, you know, it's all kind of happening pretty quickly. You know, that meme of it's happening. That's kind of what's going on with Pitt basketball recruiting right now. And the number one guy I think they got to get is R.J. Davis. R.J. Davis is a four-star guard, a point guard who really, you know, especially if you're not going to have Xavier Johnson, R.J. Davis is the guy who steps in to that point guard role next year once Johnson is gone. And, you know, that's a lot to ask of a freshman, but, you know, this is basketball, right? I mean, freshmen can come in and do that. He was here on an official visit over the, you know, this past weekend. And, I mean, I got to think he's right there at the top of Pitt's target list. And, I mean, you know, there are different guys they need at different positions. John Hugley, a big center prospect, is coming in this coming weekend. And he actually was here this past weekend on an unofficial visit, kind of hanging out with R.J. Davis on the visit, which is a good sign. And, you know, seems like he's friends with Noah Collier as well. And so, you know, I think Pitt's been the favorite or considered, you know, right at the top of Hugley's recruitment for a long time. It would be huge because they do need to get someone to really kind of take over the center position, and Hugley could potentially do that. You go back and forth about what's the biggest priority, what do you need the most? Hugley would be huge as a big post player, but I mean, I think R.J. Davis is the guy they've absolutely got to get. They've invested a lot into recruiting him. They've made him a priority target. I mean, he is the number one point guard that they're after, and you know, there are a lot of signs pointing toward him going to Pitt. If he does go to Pitt, it would be, you know, a monster addition in terms of, first of all, just being a really good player coming onto the roster, and then, you know, also really kind of making sure that if Xavier Johnson does go, there's no, you know, real, you know, you don't experience a huge drop off there. You're able to continue to build on what you've already been putting together and keep it moving with Davis kind of running the point. If they could add Davis to go with Collier, and if they could add Davis and Hugley to go with Collier and fill the three spots they know they have right now, and then get one more guy, there's a number of good options. You know, I mean, whether you want to talk about DJ Gordon, who's a wing at First Love, Earl Timberlake, who's a wing prospect who was here on an official visit that weekend of the Virginia game. He would probably be, I mean, he's a five-star prospect. Earl Timberlake is another wing, and, you know, a guy who's taken a lot of visits. He's taken all his official visits, and it's tough to get a read on him. He's still got more visits left to take. If you could, you know, I mean, they have Collier wrapped up now. If you could get Davis and Hugley to go with Collier, which seems pretty likely, you're going to be off to a great start. If you top it off with Earl Timberlake, that's one of the best Pitt recruiting classes in a long, long time. It might also be tough to do that, but they are in on other guys. I mean, obviously, they're still trying to work on Puff Johnson, Cam Johnson's younger brother, who's playing in Arizona right now. That move to Arizona certainly did not help Pitt's chances, and things sort of seem to be drifting away from there for a while. But there's a handful of guys that they're on. Is Jeff Capel really? I think, you know, a week from now, we could be doing this podcast again and be talking about Capel having, a really big recruiting class coming together, a really good recruiting class coming together. And this is what you want to see out of Jeff Capel. You know, he was hired to improve the recruiting, not to, you know, and of course the coaching as well, but the recruiting, you know, Capel was supposed to bring kind of an instant boost to that. I think there were probably a fair number of people who felt like the 2019 class, those guys who are on freshmen on campus now, Gerald Drumgoole and, Champagne and Koulibaly, that those guys are, that recruiting class wasn't quite up to snuff on what people were hoping Capel would get in his second class. But if he can turn around and back it up with Noah Collier, R.J. Davis, John Hugley, and possibly Earl Timberlake, I think that would cover for a lot of the concerns that that may have come up. And it also, it gives Capel a foundation to keep building this team and keep having success going forward. So a good start to the class for Capel so far. And then a real chance, you know, possibly as soon as this weekend, with John Hughley taking his official visit a week after he was here on an unofficial, which happened to coincide with RJ Davis's official visit, there's a real chance to bang home like 75% of this class and with really good players and some top-end targets still sitting out there for that potential fourth spot that might come open in the recruiting class. So basketball recruiting definitely coming together, and if you know, we'll obviously have lots of news to discuss when it comes out, whether we discuss it on the message boards or also here on the podcast. We write about it on PantherLair.com. There's plenty going on with Jeff Capel's efforts. So pretty good time for Pitt right now in general. You know, whether it's the success of the volleyball program, the soccer team's winning a few matches, the football team setting itself up for a run through this 2019 season that could potentially be pretty successful. A pretty nice looking 2020 recruiting class for the football team that's holding together right now through the fall. And then a good start to the 2020 recruiting class for Jeff Capel as he enters the fall, you know, about to enter his second season as the head coach. All right, I think we'll wrap it up there. The Panther Lair podcast. Appreciate you tuning in. Make sure you check out the website, panther-lair.com. I didn't even tell you that I'm having Devil's Backbone is the beer of choice right now. They got a lot of good stuff. This cattywampus Belgian style IPA is maybe my personal favorite. Although they have like a smoky lager that's really good too. I mean, they have a lot of good stuff out of Devil's Backbone. So look for that one. I think it's one of the you know, you don't see it as prominent in a lot of six-pack shops, but it's there. So try and find some good Devil's Backbone. I'm loving their stuff right now. So, you know, they support the podcast, so we always we appreciate them, support them. So you should go check them out. And, of course, check out the website, panther-lair.com, pittsburgh.rivals.com. It's the most comprehensive source of Pitt sports news on the internet, football, basketball, recruiting. You find it all at pantherlair.com. And, of course, we have message boards where you can interact and talk about everything going on in the world of Pitt sports. Whether you want to talk about the 2-2 start, the UCF game, what do you expect out of the final 8 games for this Pitt team? It's all that conversation is happening right now at panther-lair.com. And on the basketball side, you want to talk about the commitment of Noah Collier, you talk about Jeff Capel's continued pursuit of Earl Timberlake and RJ Davis and all these guys. You can find it all at PantherLair.com, Pittsburgh.Rivals.com. So check that out throughout the week. Definitely check it out on game day because we have lots of content and coverage to get you ready for the game. And through the game, we have on the message boards, we have our game thread where you can talk about the game as it's happening with other Pitt fans. It's good place to be, good times, and entertaining conversation. So you can check it all out, PantherLair.com. Don't forget, Saturday morning, 8 a.m., the Panthers Insider Show on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Make sure you tune into that. You can call the show. We can talk to you then and you know, hear what you think, expecting, you know, what you're expecting out of the game. So tune in on Saturday mornings, 8 a.m. on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. We'll talk to you then. We'll be on the message boards all week long for conversations. And then, of course, we'll have our drive home podcast after the game on Saturday. We'll be back next Wednesday for another Panther Lair show. So thanks again for tuning in. We really appreciate it. Thanks to Pat Bostic for joining us. And we will talk to you in a few days. Have a great rest of the week. Enjoy the game on Saturday.